It's November 21st, 2008. I'm Mike Benedetti, and this is 508, a show about Worcester. Hello, everyone. Here we are again with Brendan Milliken. Brendan, how are you doing?
Excellent. How are you, sir?
I am doing okay. I feel like the last couple of weeks, there has been news, certainly. There have been things that have happened in the city of Worcester. It hasn't necessarily been the kind of stuff that is fun to talk about on the internet, or the kind of stuff that actually seems very new. It kind of reminds me a little bit of that movie Groundhog Day. Do you ever see that movie Groundhog Day?
Oh, very familiar. Very familiar.
I can imagine being on the city council like being on an inverted version of Groundhog Day. In the movie of Groundhog Day, Bill Murray was cursed to live the exact same day over and over. Like, all the external circumstances of his world were exactly the same. He could choose to change the way he reacted to them and modify the world that way, but every day he woke up, the exact same thing was on the radio, the exact same person was walking down the street at the exact same time and would say the exact same thing to him.
Yeah.
Except that it's actually kind of flipped version of Groundhog Day, because, like, the world changes, the world moves on, things vary from year to year, and yet, on the city council, it's like the exact same meeting every week. It's like the exact.
It is.
It's like a person walking through the world, saying the exact same thing, walking down the street at the exact same timing, whether or not there's a car coming.
And it's the worst part is how predictable it is. Where, you know, we end up a national election cycle, and then we automatically, because of the way our election cycle works locally, we automatically go into this, you know, local election cycle. So now we start the property tax debates. We start talking, you know, and it's not like we haven't had a property tax debate before. I mean, for the last 10 years, like you said, I mean, like Groundhog's Day, for the last 10 years, every other year we have a property tax debate. And it's, you know, we still haven't figured it out. Nothing has gotten any better. Right? And really all it does is force people like yourself, like myself, who find some bizarre pleasure in commentating on what other people are doing. It makes you realize, especially at this time of the year, that you've been saying the exact same thing for at least, well, for me, it's been like 10 years. I mean, it's been since I became a moderately sentient being around the age of 22. I've been, like, repeating myself on a two-year cycle, the exact same thing. It's sad. It's depressing. I think this is actually where most, you know, seasonal, like, going into the holidays depression comes from, is realizing that local government is repetitive and frightening. And you get all worked up, you know, during the summer and whatnot. There's so much exciting stuff happening. And then you realize that, shit, I've done this before. And it's your whole world crashes down around you.
The thing with Pilot is especially galling to me. That I'm going to stop calling it Pilot and start calling it Bilet for bullshit in lieu of taxes. Because that is what we have actually gotten out of this debate. You know, I'm seeing this week that the colleges have put out a report about how much they contribute to the community, which would seem to indicate that they're still not that receptive to, you know, paying taxes.
It's basically what the report they came out with was basically like, if the college consortium was run by a benevolent Dr. Evil, they're just like yelling like $1 million. You know, it's like, we give you so much money that, like, you, it would be impossible for the city to generate this kind of money on their own. I mean, Worcester Magazine had, you know, their city council, like, report card this week, and I think it was Councilor Palmieri that had, like, a quote in there. He's looking for, like, $750,000 to $1 million for, like, $1 million from the colleges. They already give us tens of millions of dollars. It's like, they are throwing money around like Lil Wayne, right? Or Lil Wayne, I guess I'm not supposed to add the end of the...
You can call him Little Wayne, because this is basically like a highbrow program.
Like, making it rain like Little Wayne, right? I mean, it's just like, they're throwing money all around the room, everyone's getting loaded, and still, you know, Councilor Palpatine wants his $1 million. You know, people have no grip on the reality that is the amount of money that comes flowing into the city from the colleges. But we've been having this argument since Jordan Levy and Jeff Mulford were manning the council chambers.
This is from 1982 or 1983 this started?
Well, Jordan's always been a big proponent of Pilot. Yeah, and I mean, it's always been trying to find ways to bleed out the colleges. This isn't anything new. It's you know, people see free money and they want to latch onto it because it keeps them from having to come up with creative ways to control their own spending problems.
Man.
But, again, see, now I'm back in the trap. Now I just got myself, my blood pressure's up, I just got worked up here, and now I'm going to be worked up for another 2 years over the same bullshit, and then I'll get all depressed again.
I think that the thing that you should do is, you should just change your own reaction irrationally. every 6 months. You should, 6 months from now, you should be really optimistic about it. 6 months later, pessimistic. 6 months, you know, favor it. 6 months, oppose it. Because that may be, you know, in the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray, the star, found a way to sort of go with the flow. And I think that in this case, the thing actually might be that going with the flow, like getting involved in this bizarre argument might be the problem. You know, it's like, I feel like I deal with a lot of people with mental illness from day to day. And part of the thing is like to not get into their, what our forefathers have called head trip, you know? That like, you know, and I've heard so many stories of people doing this with guys, that a guy will sit down and he'll just start to tell you the story of his life and be like, whatever, you know, then I did this and then I did this. And that sometimes the thing to say is like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, right. Like to be extraordinarily disinterested, which kind of breaks him out of that trap of like, I'm telling the story of my life for the 100th time this week.
Right.
So maybe that's the thing to do, is vary your response to the city council, vary your response to the public debate.
Well, that was, I think, the beautiful thing about City Square. Was for this brief moment in time we had, and how long ago was that now?
This is like another thing. This is like the City Square thing is like another thing for that short list of things that will be debated endlessly.
Well, but it was a new thing, and I think when did we introduce City Square? That was like 3 decades ago now.
Something
I've completely
like that.
Lost track of time. But it was like 400 years ago we started talking about City Square, but it was new. It was something completely new, and it was like this new element, this new kind of silly got entered into the debate. So we had something new that we didn't already know the outcome about. You know, we know the outcome of pilot. We nothing will be done. We know the outcome of everything we debate. Nothing will change. You know, we need to save that so we can debate it later. City Square, something completely new. We had never, uncharted ground. But now we're starting to go in circles with that again. So it's, you can't win, dude. I'm depressed again.
I got a very slight change of pace. This actually gets into an issue which we have endlessly debated on this program, but which I have a twist. I have a new response this time. I've been wondering to myself, to what extent has the problem of the last 2 weeks not having any sort of interesting, fun, light, discussable news have to do with the fact that on this program, at least, whenever we don't have anything coming from outside the mainstream media to talk about in particular, we just kind of go, the Telegram is always like our go-to source. It's like, okay, they'll bail us out this week. And then I wonder with the staffing cuts and everything, if there's just less random crap in the Telegram and Gazette. And so it's, you know, less likely to appeal. I'm going to try a project probably over on Real Worcester a couple times this week, sort of visioning the future, trying to say, you know, what sort of Worcester news could I put together today if the Telegram and Gazette didn't exist? You know, like what are the best photos? What are the best, you know, what are some stories that have had hard news coverage, you know, on the blogs? What are some good features on the blogs? People can mention the Telegram, but, you know, not like people commenting directly on it unless they're doing a substantial commentary. I'm going to try this just for a couple of days. I mean, it's not going to, you know, anybody else could do this. And if anybody else does this, just let me know. And I would be happy to publicize your efforts as well as as much as my own. I'm just sort of curious to see if we're like, are we like a 10th of 1% there? Are we 1% there? Are we, you know?
I think it would be a fraction so small that we would not be able to calculate it.
I'm also going to count Scott Zoback's stuff that's written for their blog.
Right,
so that gets us a little bit up.
But there's, you know, it's easy to relish in the idea of old media, you know, like being old and, you know, old, and not being able to adjust with the times and whatnot. But that's the thing, is that there's no way that on a local level, that the infrastructure that exists within a paper like the Telegram or even Worcester Magazine, you know, I mean, there's history within Worcester Magazine where, you know, one city editor kind of hands the reign over to the next and whatnot, and there's, you know, there's connections of within that infrastructure, whether it be sources or, you know, the places to go to find interesting people, you know, how to dig up stories. I mean, that's the sort of stuff that it would take decades for, you know, local bloggers or anyone, you know, any sort of citizen journalist, Rosalie, right? Anyone who's new to the game, it would take decades for them to actually
figure
wrap
out
their head around that infrastructure. Which, yeah, it's going to be really sad when that does actually start to really break up, because the infrastructure's still there. You know, the paper may be kind of stinky right now, but the infrastructure still exists. Mm-hmm. And if you ever had the opportunity to interact with those journalists, it's clear that they still they are 100% journalists, right? That's important because that's what the city really relies on more than anything is that information infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found an amazing article the other day, which I cannot find now, about the crisis in the newspaper industry, which really made me realize this. So yes, I my guess is that what I'm going to find from doing this project for a day or two is that we're just not even close. But you know, I mean, to me this is the difference between me saying every week that, you know, this is a real problem and like figuring out objectively, yes, this is a problem. If I wanted to get my news not from advertising supported print media this week in Worcester, I would not succeed. I would not get anywhere close.
But there's something else that's interesting there, though, Mike, where like, if we, let's just say, for example, that the Telegram, like the old media collapsing, like the Telegram, whatever, is just, you know, one more forecast of bigger things to come, right? I mean, you know, let's say our own, like, global economy just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one day we wake up and everything is just falling to pieces. You know, if I woke up one morning and not only was I, you know, unemployed, but there was no options for being employed, and like, you know, our economy really just collapsed, I could totally see, you know, in between, you know, organizing raids on Auburn for supplies, you know, I could totally see picking up journalism as like a full-time sort of thing, right? I mean, if you removed money from the equation, right, like, and I wasn't in my 30s and not interested in like a total career change sort of thing, I could totally see just picking up that sort of like raw information exchange as a way to fill all of this free time. So it's at least conceivable that, you know, if things really did shift in our society in some way, that yes, maybe the Telegram might go away, but it's conceivable that there are people who could totally pick up the slack there without, just because they've got plenty of free time to do so.
Yeah.
We would have to focus more on raiding the surrounding towns for food.
Well, I wanted to mention that at the end of today's show, we're going to have a little audio clip from a celebration for the 100th anniversary of the standardization of Albanian spelling, which took place in Worcester last weekend. This is a group called Kombi, which is a local Albanian group. And where did it take place? Let me see. This is at Coral Seafood. Apparently it was a big shindig, and so we're going to have a little audio at the end of the show. I also wanted to talk a little bit about WCCA. Two things about WCCA, I guess. The first thing I want to talk about is, Brandon, have you ever thought about making a public access show in Worcester?
I'd love to make a public access. I think about it all the time.
Let me ask you this. No, honestly, what do you think is the main roadblock to you doing this?
I'm lazy.
Okay. Because...
No, I mean, I really think that's it. There's no... Having spoken to you enough, I think I have the system roughly understood, and I think it's the case where if I provided you folks with a you know, reasonable footage in a reasonable format, that it would make the airwaves. So I mean, there's no reason why I couldn't film something in my basement, right? I mean, I think it's really just a matter of timing and the ability to sit down and throw together some ideas. I love video, though. I still think video. I wish I didn't use words on the internet and, you know, type. I would prefer not typing anything on the internet and just deal in video.
You'd be a vlogger.
I would be a video blogger.
That's the trouble, is that vlogger sounds even worse than blogger. I think that's
why it's a disease.
That's why
it
more people don't do it.
It sounds like something communicable.
Well, we are going to have a class. I'm hoping to have a class in December, which would be a quick start video class. The concept would be similar to what you said, that if you live in Worcester, you probably already own all the equipment you would need to make a reasonably good-looking television show. Mm-hmm. And this would be a class. It would be a couple-hour class. If you became a member, it would be a free class. And membership has other benefits, like having a much better chance of getting stuff on the television. Membership's like $50 a year, $40 a year, I forget which. Yeah, but the idea is that we would just sit down with you for 3 hours and say, okay, here's some equipment that you have, or we can use our equipment as a test. Let's see, how do we shoot, how do we edit video using digital camera you might have around the house, computer you might have around the house? How do you then, you know, how do you then massage it to get it on television? You know, what format do you need? And actually, more importantly, what are some tricks you can use on the sound and the lighting and the editing to make it look as good as that equipment is capable of looking? And that's the idea, is that, you know, right now, if you want to really get involved with cable access, it's usually, you know, several months of weekly classes or something like that. Either that or no instruction at all. So this is like a happy medium of, you know, you come in for a long lunch, or you come in, you know, you skip dinner and come in one evening, and we sit down and we run through everything. And then at the end of the thing, you're in the system, you got your membership. You ever make any little videos, we throw them on the air, and if you want to have a regular show, you're well on your way to doing that, too.
You guys should, you know, has anyone ever talked about down there putting together a regularly scheduled show, but that was made up of other people's kind of like micro shows?
We have a weekend news magazine called Community Vision. And Community Vision is a project that the interns do. We have a very vibrant internship program.
Right.
And the interns come in, and that's kind of what they do week to week, is work on Community Vision. And you'll see on Community Vision sometimes random videos and whatnot. People don't make a lot of use of the ability of, like, giving videos to Community Vision. They sometimes do, but not a lot. But I think that a class like this, one of my hopes is that you actually get enough people creating small videos that you actually then would need to expand Community Vision to an hour-long show, or add a second similar show, you know, of like, here's the best of local video.
Well, let's use this podcast as a potential call to action. What I was thinking would be great would be if you could get a group of like local, say like local bloggers, whatever, people who already have their own distribution channel, so to speak, to put together like a weekly 5-minute video of their own, whether it be, you know, newsy, you know, editorial, whatever the case may be. And then at the end of every week, turn those, you know, collection of those videos over to cable access to smash them together and turn them into like one, you know, half hour show. Because, you know, the problem with the internet when it comes to video is the attention span. You know, it's even faster than the losing attention spans, even easier than it is with a remote control. So you can't really break that 5 to 10 minute mark. But, you know, TV, you take a collection of 5 to 10 minute videos, smash them together, and then you've actually got something that might be palatable to the home viewing audience.
The thing I always try to use to sell people for making stuff on public access is that you're reaching a very different audience than online. And you're actually reaching a considerable audience. Like when I'm on, people come up and say, "Hey, I saw you on TV." You know, the surveys show that something like 80% of Worcester Cable customers, I think maybe closer to 90% of cable customers, claim that they sometimes or often watch WCCA. So it's something that you do flip past, even if you just have basic cable. So to me, that's the thing, is you've written a blog post, you're happy with the blog post, why not, you know, turn your camera on, tape yourself reading the blog post or commenting on it off the cuff, burn that to a CD, put that file on a DVD, whatever, take it down to WCCA, say, "Mike Benedetti, this is for you." And again, we can't guarantee anything. Like in an informal situation like this, we can't guarantee anything. But depending on what we get, you know, it's something. It's something that we'll try to do something with. And it would be great if every local blogger just did this as a matter of course. I mean, put it up in your own blog too. But again, it's just a way to get that, you know, like literally hundreds of other people to see that opinion.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when I did Coffee with Connie, and that was 2 or 3 years ago. I think it was amazing in the weeks following that airing how many little old ladies came up to me, like you said, on the street, in other, you know, like public forums, like meetings and whatnot. I would get pulled aside by this dainty little hand would grab my shirt as I was walking by and pull me into a corner to say, you know, "You did a great job with Connie." And I'm like, who are these people? You know, and again, they're like the extras of your life. They're people that you see all the time. It's really the city as a whole. Everybody's watching. And when you're online, you kind of wish that you could figure out a way to expand your audience, but there's no way you can really force that down somebody's throat. Television is just something that's so pervasive, and it has that trust factor. Where
credibility.
That's just it. Like I'm going to be a complete douchebag whether I'm on Coffee with Connie or I'm on my website, right? I mean, it doesn't change who I am, but somehow I'm a legitimate public figure when I'm sitting at Block 5 with Connie Lukes online. I'm just that guy. But it's amazing how in the eyes of a, you know, 80-year-old woman, you somehow become legitimate once you're on TV. So it is something that would probably be worthwhile for internet personalities and whatnot to actually think about. That, you know, you're never going to cross that bridge with certain demographics. But it's sometimes easier to go to them on their own turf, and you'll sell them that way.
Yeah. Well, I should mention in passing, too, that the Participatory Culture Foundation is doing a project. They've announced this for next year, where they're going to sort of build video aggregator sites for local communities. You know, it's easy enough. I mean, every YouTube or whatever is all video aggregator sites. They've built these before. The idea being that you would have like a WorcesterLocalVideo.com, and you could go there, and that would be like, you know, via RSS, the Worcester Local Videos. Mm-hmm. And the little twist that they've added is that they're partnering with like local community media organizations in each city to take up the reins of that. So in Worcester, I believe that WCCA is going to be that organization. So right now, there's, you know, right now, if there was a Worcester Local Video page, it would be stuff WCCA has posted and like a smattering of other stuff off of YouTube or wherever. So it would be nice to see a little ramping up in that, you know, before the spring when all this stuff launches too. Did you want to mention shout-outs while we're talking about WCCA? Before we talk about the Albanian alphabet?
I flipping through the stations last night, I stumbled across the WCCA shout-outs. And I don't know if these were this year's, last year's, they were fresh shout-outs, or shout-outs with some miles on them already. But it just seems like the silliest thing that I... You know, radio stations used to do this years ago. You'd have some, like, crazy, batshit insane lady call up wanting to give shout-outs to all of her cousins and whatnot. And this is the exact same thing, except people, like, are actually showing their faces. And there's no hiding who they are. It's like some guy shows up to give a shout-out, like, with some, I don't know, it looks like almost like a weird blue screen-ish sort of, like, holiday scene behind him, giving shout-outs to all of his friends and family in Worcester.
It's actually not a blue screen. You'll find this interesting. It's actually a photo.
It's actually a photo?
Yeah. We have it rolled up. We'll use the exact same photo this year.
Well, that explains... Because it had that sort of, like it was just barely shaking a little bit, like sometimes bad blue screen does. So it's probably just a fan.
Probably kids. Probably kids running around back there.
And it was strangely... Like, it was the... It's exactly the reason why I find myself watching, you know, public access... oftentimes, because you never know what you're going to come across. I remember there was a day probably 2 years ago where it was everybody I knew who was on Instant Messenger suddenly pinging each other frantically because there was like an Elvis impersonator singing at like a
at White City. At the senior citizens home.
Right. And it was like one of those moments in time, man, where like this is on public access. I don't have to pay for this. And it's just amazing. These shout outs are like strangely the same sort of thing. And it not quite as awesome. But it's just really great to watch, like, raw, gritty Worcester personalities, like, showing up in their like, Little League, you know, jackets.
I want to say to Mom and Vinny, Merry Christmas.
And that's exactly what it was. It's the guy who you know, you're positive this guy gave you a finger, and gave you the finger in Kelly Square that morning, and here he is on TV wishing you a Merry Christmas. That's great. That's like the beauty of public access.
I love taping the shout-outs. You know, I'm not a hands-on camera person, so I just sort of wander around and hand out candy and stuff during the shout-outs. I love taping the shout-outs because it's just so positive. It's like some people come down specifically for it, and some people just come down because it's like, you know, it's WCCA, we're on Main Street, we're pulling people in off the street. We have people with costumes pulling people in off the street. And it's great because it's like saying to people, come into this room and wish people happy holidays and then leave. So there's just so much positivity. You know, everyone is there for a common purpose of just goodwill. Man.
That was one of the things that popped into my head was how, you know, there's obviously some dedication on the part of the people involved where they're making the decision to go to you to film that, which I think is pretty great. But have you guys ever thought about taking it on the road, like going to like a mall or like a random spot on Main Street, you know,
we did this year's Halloween shout outs at the Halloween outlet. I have not seen that video. I think that because the Christmas shout outs work so well in the studio, we may just do it in the studio. Like the best one, I have to see if I can find the best one ever was this one of the Honeydew Donuts family. Like, the people who run that Honeydew Donuts came over, and they just did a really goofy, fun shout-out. So, you know, I don't know. There's also so many great outtakes. That's kind of the disappointing thing, is that you could really, instead of having a half hour of people saying happy holidays, you could have a half hour of, like, people trying to wrangle their children. Which might be better, but anyway. Well, let's listen to some stuff about Albania. And I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for being on the show.
One quick thing before you go.
Yeah.
I was in Southern California 2 weeks ago for a wedding, and I noticed that the only song playing on any radio station, including, I think, like NPR, I mean, it was everywhere, was this ridiculous song called Crazy by Pitbull featuring Lil Jon.
Okay.
And I think for at least 1 week you should use that as the the opening sequence. It's such a disgustingly poisonous earworm that I think it's necessary that you use it as the opening or maybe closing track for 508.
I will look into it. I will look into it.
As the mayor of Worcester, and my parents were Albanian. They were born. They were born in Gita Koster, and my husband's parents and his grandparents were born in Korcha. It's wonderful to have as a goal to preserve the Albanian language and to be proud of our traditions. I'm hoping to see one day one of these children stand behind the podium and say, I am the governor, or I am the president of the United States, and my parents were Albanian.
I am Shoqëri Bytyçi, vice president of Albanian American Cultural and Association Kombi. We tonight celebrating 100 years of unified Albanian alphabet. That's very big event because after this Congress, our writing and everything become easier to use. All Albanian population, doesn't matter where they lived, in Yugoslavia, Macedonia, or in Greece, they conversation between Albanians become much easier. Before this time, Albanians used Latin, most of them Greek and Slavic, Arabic. But after this time, we had letters and send alphabet. That's very big event, and I am very happy together celebrating this event with Albanians from all countries, from Macedonia, Greece, Kosovo, and this celebration is very, very big event.
At the last week in November, we're going to see something that hasn't happened in Worcester. We're going to be flying the Albanian flag in front of City Hall.